Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
But God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Welcome to Q Ideas. I'm Gabe Lyons, and today I'm interviewing Heather Avis. And Heather wrote a wonderful book called The Lucky Few, and she describes this amazing journey that her and her husband have been on that involves both adoption as well as special needs. And it's quite an amazing story. And you know, when you just meet people where you go, you are a superstar. You are amazing. Heather's one of those people where she's just not only a passionate advocate for people with special needs and specifically Down syndrome, which if you know my story and you know Rebecca's story and our family story, we have a child with Down syndrome. Cade is 16 years old now. It's been a big part of our life. He was born in 2001 when Rebecca was 27 years old. It was a surprise to us. We didn't know in prenatal diagnosis that there was even a chance that he would have Down syndrome. And it wouldn't have mattered at all except maybe to stoke more fears. But the reality was, once he was born, I mean, it was just amazing to get to know this little guy who was going to be a little different than some of the other folks around him and some of his peers. But as we've learned throughout these 16 years, it's been an amazing journey. And if you don't know somebody with Down syndrome, you need to know somebody. You need to understand these children and how much life they bring. And so it's fun for me to have with me in the studio my daughter, Kennedy Lyons, who's 11 years old. And this is part of her story, too. And it's fun through a child's eyes to just see what it's been like to have a sibling with Down syndrome. Because so many times you hear early on that if you have a child with Down syndrome, the siblings are going to struggle. It's going to be challenging for them. And so it's fun to have Kennedy here to talk a little bit about her brother. She's a little nervous, and it's okay. So, Kennedy, I just want you to tell us a little bit about, for those out there who don't have a brother with Down syndrome like you do, what is it that you wish they understood more about people like Cade?
That they didn't choose to have Down syndrome and to not make fun of it.
Yeah.
Because God made them the way they are.
Well, we talk about how Cade has an extra chromosome, right? That's the one thing that Cade has that kind of makes him different in terms of his body and his genetics. And so he actually has something more than anybody else has, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And what are some of the things Cade does that you just think are funny and a little different than maybe other kids do, but it makes you smile?
He loves to give hugs, and he's just always happy and has a smile on his face. He loves to be with other people, and he loves to play games and do puzzles. And
he loves water slides, too, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's summertime, so Cade can't wait for his first trip down the water slide. And whenever we say it, he immediately folds his arms like you're required to do at a water park and shows us what it's going to look like when he goes down that water slide. One of the things I learned when Cade was just 1 year old was that 9 out of 10 children with Down syndrome are terminated when the parents know in utero that their child may have this diagnosis. 9 out of 10. And to understand that, man, 1 out of 10 of these children with Down syndrome that we see walking around represent an entire population of people that aren't walking around because of a lack of awareness. Well, that's what we're going to get to hear more about as we talk to Heather and hear about why she's so passionate about these children, why she adopted 2 children with special needs, which those of you who have adopted or you've looked into adoption, you know, children with special needs many times are hard to be placed because so many families, again, have fears about what this is going to be like. She's going to give us a completely different perspective on why her family cares so much about adopting these children and why all of us are better off when we have somebody in our life that maybe is a little different than us and maybe doesn't meet up to what society's vision of normal is, but in fact requires us to really re-examine what our perceptions are. So let's listen in. Well, Heather, it's so good to be with you. And for the listeners who just have never met you before, haven't had the opportunity to hear you speak or just know anything about your story, I kind of want to start there at the beginning and just let them get to know a little bit about who you are and kind of, you know, pre a book launching this year, you know, there's a long story that's led up to this moment. Just catch us up a little bit on that.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, if we want to go way, way back, I was born 1981, November 11th. And I grew up in a pretty small little town in California. Fast forward years, met my husband in high school, although we weren't high school sweethearts by any means, but we did meet when we were that young. And then we did get married very young. We'll celebrate 15 years this year. And he and I just had a plan for our lives. It would be one thing. I was going to be a teacher. He's a graphic designer. We'd have a few kids. Life would go on. And that isn't exactly how it played out. So we ended up trying to have kids after being married for a few years and just found out that we wouldn't be able to naturally. That set us in this like whirlwind of infertility, which is just a pretty brutal place to find yourself. For those listeners who have been there, it's one of those things that you don't know it until you know it. And there's really no way to relate unless you've been in it. And then that led us to a crossroads of in vitro fertilization or adoption. And we felt like IVF was not something we could really handle at that time. And so adoption was the next best thing. I mean, the end goal was to have kids. And we recognized that there's more than one way for that to happen. So we ended up pursuing an adoption and we wanted a healthy infant, went with like expensive agency, local here in California. And I mean, long story short, we get this email about children with Down syndrome, and Down syndrome was never in the cards for us initially. That was just not going to be something that would happen in our lives. And it was one of those moments with, it felt like it was definitely God just like interrupting our lives, and we didn't want him to. So we didn't go in like heroes. I think people often hear our story that we've adopted kids with Down syndrome and all that. And they think, wow, you're such a hero. It's like, no. We went in this like fists up, not
right.
We were really resistant, you know, like we weren't into it at first, but, by God's grace, we just kept stepping towards that. So we ended up adopting a little girl with Down syndrome. She had a congenital heart defect and pulmonary hypertension and all these health issues. And we brought her home and we say she was our best. Yes. She was just such a gift to our lives.
Yeah.
And she opened the door for more adoptions. We adopted two more kids, including another kid with Down syndrome. So it's kind of like the very short condensed version.
Oh man, I know. And listen, this story is incredible. And I didn't do it justice by having you just summarize it, because it's a, because I know you've hit so many important points, that so many of our listeners I know feel, you know, first off of the inability to get pregnant or the mm-hmm. infertility moment for so many couples can be really devastating, right? I mean, it can really wreak havoc in the marriage, questioning God. I mean, it just, you know, you sort of, all of us have these expectations about how life's supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you find yourself in a moment where, you know, it didn't happen the way you were thinking. For Rebecca and I, it was the moment our firstborn, was born, Cade, and we didn't know prior to his birth, that he was diagnosed with Down syndrome. And so we share that in common. But it was a crisis moment. I was age 27. And I just remember, you know, you sort of go back to center. You go back to like, what do I really believe? What's really mm-hmm. important?
Mm-hmm.
So for your journey, for you and your husband, I mean, that had to be a pretty incredible decision to move to say, hey, we're going to move from trying to have our own children that we're going to, mm-hmm. Through normal process, have children. We're going to actually adopt. Like, that was a huge decision. But then the next decision to say, we're going to adopt somebody, with Down syndrome. And for our listeners, will you explain a little bit about just technically what Down syndrome is, and then, what it looks like in the adoption process, these children, mm-hmm. because I know many of them, sometimes it's hard. They're the least likely to get adopted.
Yeah. Yeah. So Down syndrome is, there's the 21st chromosome has a third copy. So people with Down syndrome have 47 chromosomes instead of 46. And then with that, there's commonalities like, facial features. There's usually an intellectual delay. There's physical delays. There's all kinds of things that come with it that are common. Not necessarily every single person with Down syndrome shares these same traits, but they're very common amongst the Down syndrome community. So, and congenital heart defects and are pretty common. I think it's like 60% of kids with Down syndrome have that. Both of our kids do. And in terms of adoption, I mean, our eldest and our youngest who have Down syndrome, they're both born in California, and both of them, their birth parents have other children who don't have Down syndrome. So an adoption plan was created solely on the fact that these kids have Down syndrome, and that their birth families didn't feel like they were equipped to parent them. So just the idea, and then I think that there's a lot of layers to it, Gabe, in terms of like their stories,
sure.
But just this idea that it's like this terrifying, hard, devastating thing that Down syndrome is. And then, as you know, as a parent with a child with Down syndrome, you go through those phases, but then you realize, oh, this is a kid. And yeah, there's hard things, but there's hard things with all of our kids. And having a kid with Down syndrome is a total gift. So more and more people recognize that. I know so many families who have adopted kids with Down syndrome. And there's, I think in the United States, there are children who are available for adoption with Down syndrome, but they are snatched up very quickly. There's usually a line of people who are like, who recognize this is amazing. And it's oftentimes families who already have a child with Down syndrome and then bring on another child because they recognize the gift. And internationally is really where it's at. There are families all over the world in different countries who, as soon as that child's diagnosed, there's no way they're going to parent that child. So they're put in an orphanage. There's organizations like one called Reese's Rainbow that does international adoptions specifically for kids with Down syndrome. So the process is the same as any adoption. You have to go through the steps, jump through the hoops, pay the big money, do all the things to adopt a kid.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I think there is this misperception that if you parent a child with Down syndrome, number one, your life's kind of over. You're not going to be able to pursue anything other than just being this parent to this child. You know, and secondly, the life of your siblings is going to be harder and more difficult. And man, for all the families we know and our own experience, sure, there's some challenges as there is with any child. I mean, we have two other typical children, and we spend just as much energy and time helping them work through all kinds of issues as we do with Cade. Cade's actually the easiest. And the other thing is, you know, I think for some listeners who don't have a child with special needs, which, you know, the numbers of parents with special needs is rising dramatically due to autism and a lot of other things in our society today. But for those who don't have children in that situation, I think when they hear us say as parents, it's such a gift or so special, they almost think we're playing some psychological trick on ourselves so that we feel better about our situation.
Interesting.
But you know, as well as I do, like, this is reality. Like, truly, it is a gift. How do you describe why it's such a gift and how it's been a gift in your life?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I think in all things in life, like I said earlier about infertility, you can't know what you don't know. So when you're viewing it far away, it is, you can't understand it if you're not living it. I always encourage people, and so then it's hard for me to describe how it's a gift besides describing it, just that this is, I see life through a different lens. We've had to slow down in the best ways with our kids and just recognize that beauty is so much more than what society tries to tell us it is, that worth is, finding worth in humanity is so much greater than what society's tried to convince us that it is. I think our lives are richer because we have kids with Down syndrome. So you can say these things all day long, but you've got to have a relationship with somebody who has Down syndrome or a disability to really understand it and be in it. I try to tell people, you know, there's all these ideas about when a mother gets an in utero diagnosis or an at birth diagnosis for a child with Down syndrome, then all this narrative plays out in their head. And it's like, where did that narrative come from? Because when I speak to people like you or people who are living the reality, it's not our narrative. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so then I think the only voices who should have a say in what it's like to have a child with Down syndrome are those of us who have children with Down syndrome. And you and I both know that the majority of us are saying, this is a gift.
Yeah.
This is incredible. We're so lucky.
That's right.
You know, so I don't know why no one's listening to us.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we, I don't know, 15 years ago, when we had discovered how much the negative story was all that people were hearing, and it was driving termination rates to where almost nine out of 10 of these children could be terminated once the parents know in their prenatal diagnosis that this is a possibility, that they really have a story that wasn't true, and it wasn't telling the whole story. And so people out of fear do respond that way because they don't know anything better. And that led us to create this book called Understanding a Down Syndrome Diagnosis for parents when they find out in that moment that they're about to have a child with Down syndrome, that they can, that there's a bigger story to this. And so it's beautiful photography of children from babies to reading with their siblings, to riding bikes in the neighborhood, to working in their 20-somethings in doctor's offices. And that's now taken on a life of its own and is in several genetics and OBGYN offices across the country. For anybody who wants to download that, by the way, it's at lettercase.org. But part of this termination rate, I know the title of your new book, The Lucky Few, I think captures a lot of what you and I realize about the fact that, man, 10% of these children maybe are even living today, that there should be 90% more of them running around and making our lives better, our communities better, our schools better, and they're not. So talk a little bit about the book and why for you it came to wanting to tell this story to more and more people, and what that's been like for you over the last 2 years as you've been writing and now starting to share the story.
Yeah. We have an Instagram account called Macy Makes My Day, which has a pretty big following. And so that's how this book came to be, is my agent followed us on Instagram, and on, like, that's how the story started. And I think my goal in all of this, in this platform that I've found myself standing on in the world of Down syndrome, is to change the narrative. We've got to shift it so that there are less termination rates, and so that my kids are stepping into a world where their worth is known. And they're not constantly stepping into spaces where they're only ever the different person. No one knows what to do or how to respond, where I'm like, feel like I'm always on guard as the mom and having to protect my kids and make sure their worth is known. So the book has been huge in that, and Instagram as well. And I get messages and Instagram comments from people literally all over the world who are just simply saying, hey, I've never known anyone with Down syndrome, and I feel now that I know your family and it changes the way I view Down syndrome. It's like, great, that's the goal. Or new mamas, I get comments all the time and emails from moms who are expecting, just simply saying, I was so terrified of what my life was going to look like, and it's been so hopeful reading your book and seeing your kids. And granted, they have to go through the process and figure it out themselves, but giving them that piece of hope. I hear from college students probably more than anyone who say, I cannot wait to start my family. I'm adopting a kid with Down syndrome. I mean, there's like, wow. Hundreds of college students, so hopefully hopefully they'll stick to that, and that's what their goals are. So it's just, I think there's so much power in one story, and whether you have a platform of 100,000 on Instagram and a book, or you just are sitting across the table from a friend, the importance of sharing your story with someone else so that there's a better understanding for humanity, for people's experiences. So I just feel really honored and humbled that we've got to be able to share our story to so many yeah. people.
And I would say in our society today, just the direction culture seems to be headed as it relates to thinking about issues such as life and, you know, even our economies and budgets and health care, all of these things, you know, people getting to know others with Down syndrome, for parents like you and I, this is critical. It's important. And anybody with special needs, because it starts to relate to this bigger life issue of, are we going to care for those who maybe some in our society would assess and say, oh, they're not contributing enough to society. They're not putting enough in. And so therefore, we don't need to protect them as much. We don't need to care about them as much. Right. And sort of one of the basis of Q has always been the idea of advancing the common good. And the definition, you know, from an old Catholic conception that Thomas Aquinas really honed, I mean, hundreds of years ago, said, you know, the common good is the most good for all people. Not just the most good for the most people, which is kind of how people can tend to think, is let's do the most good for the majority or those who are contributing or paying their taxes. Let's take care of them. But if you're not paying your taxes, well, we're not going to take care of you. Well, the good society and the idea of flourishing in a society means we as Christians have to lead the way to care for all people. Yeah. So if people aren't aware of children like ours and individuals with Down syndrome or special needs, and we don't see the value, the image of God in them, then over time, 2 decades from now, let's say, you can see where state governments and people that are making decisions about budgets and purse strings, especially when we're in an American economy, you know, so much in debt, you could see how services and things like that start to get cut away from those who contribute to society, but maybe in a different way. So as you think about the future, I know that sometimes for me can bring the most fear, because you don't know what it's going to look like.
Sure.
But as you think about the next decade or two and what it means to just for your family and those that you're getting to spend time with and that are getting to know your children, what is it that you hope for as you think about what will be different 20 years from now than maybe how things are today for life with children with Down syndrome?
Yeah, I have a lot of hopes. And my biggest one that, like my cynical pragmatic side, it's like, this will never happen. But I would love 20 years from now for a woman in a doctor's office to get an in utero diagnosis for Down syndrome and to walk out and be like, oh my gosh, you guys, guess what I get? And like high fiving around the room, you know, like
right,
that's
right.
I would love to see that. And I know that that's a very lofty goal, but I think in terms of There's like the bigger picture of it that I touched on a little bit. I want my kids to step out of my door into a world where they are known as worthy. And so how do we do that? Because there are small spaces where that's going to happen, but we need that bigger picture. We need this narrative to shift. So my hope is just for the narrative to change, for people to recognize that Down syndrome is not this like scary, awful thing, but that people with Down syndrome are living healthy, whole lives. And those of us who are interacting with them, you're talking about like what's good for all, you know, like what's good for all is having people with Down syndrome in the world and in our lives. Cause if you look at those of us who do, we are better off for it. Siblings, aunties, cousins, friends, everybody, everyone who's affected by somebody with Down syndrome, we are all better off for it. So like taking this small group and somehow saturating the larger group with it, would be like the big goal. And I think, and I've talked about this before, but I think that the church can hold the key to that, you know, the church, like big C church, whatever that means, or the church overall, we're not doing the best job of it either. If you look in your congregations, how many people with different abilities are serving and being seen as image bearers and people who have gifts and, are able to be like have spiritual gifts that are utilized and seen as worthy rather than here's a special program for these kids. I think a lot of churches are like, look, we created this special program. It's like, no. They are a part of the body of Christ. So let's make sure that they're being respected and lifted up in such a way.
Yeah, it's good. Well, at our church, I mean, we've been so thankful for the leaders in our church who've taken Cade. And now there's a couple things he does at church. One is he greets on Sunday morning. Okay. So he's at the front door saying hi to people, which he just absolutely loves to do. And then during service, he sort of has this program, like three different things he does. And one of them is he goes into the children's room of like the 5-year-olds, which he just loves little kids. And he goes in there and dances and leads worship and stands up there in front. And, you know, you can see the agency that he feels, when he's empowered.
Right.
And I think it's something that's just deeply human is that, you know, if we just treat our children like they really aren't able to do much and we don't expect much of them, then mm-hmm. they probably live up to that. If we actually empower them, then it's unbelievable what they can do. And you know as well as I do, there's so many stories of children that have grown up with Down syndrome that are doing remarkable things in the world today. And it's there is no limitation. I always try to describe to people that, you know, Cade can do almost anything. It just might take him a little longer to figure out how to do it, or he might do it a little bit slower than you can do it, but he can still do just about anything you can do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true.
Well, tell us about the way people can just continue to follow your story. So give us, I want to hear your social handles where everybody can follow you. And then as you look to the next year, are you going to be out speaking? Are you, do you find that you're getting invitations places where you were just recently at Q, which was amazing to have you a part of that. But is that kind of how people will continue to hear you, or is there more writing that you're doing or on your blog, or just kind of give us a sense of how we can keep up with your story and where you're going?
Yeah, definitely. On the day to day, we do one post a day on Instagram. So our Instagram handle is Macy Makes My Day, M-A-C-Y, Macy Makes My Day. And so that's really the best way to like stay connected with us. I'm on heatheravis.com. And so I blog on there and there's ways to get in contact with me on there. I'm doing speaking things at a handful of places, like some adoption conferences and different things like that. So I'm happy. I love to be able to share the story. So yeah, I'm happy to come speak wherever. And those are the main things. The book right now, we have theluckyfewbook.com can give you all the links you need for the book and you can see all the resources tied to that.
Yeah, it's an amazing story and it just captures, I think, so much of the life behind the scenes of real people dealing with all of the confusion of the moment of making these decisions, as well as just walking through the joy of what happens when we make those decisions. So thank you for taking the time to be a part of the Q podcast and Q in general, and excited to see this story continue to unfold.
Awesome. Thank you, Gabe. Thanks for having me.
Don't you just love Heather Avis? I mean, what an incredible story and a human being. And I think it inspires and challenges all of us to just be intentional with our lives, to understand that each of us can make a difference. And she's done it in a big way, but it's right there in her own family, right? She's doing it locally in her own family. It's affecting her own community. And now it starts to spill out, and all of us get to hear an amazing story of somebody who just said, I'm going to be faithful in this one area, and I'm going to tell others about it. And so her book, The Lucky Few, is a page turner. I know when I first received it, I started reading it, and I couldn't put it down, and our family was fighting over it because Rebecca was trying to read it. And so we were kind of passing around, and then all of a sudden we looked up, and Kennedy, who you met in the introduction, she had picked it up, and she's out on the porch reading the book. And I would recommend anybody out there, The Lucky Few by Heather Avis, something I think that'll encourage you, that'll give you a vision for a family. Maybe you've never adopted, or that's been something you're interested in. It helps you understand adoption, but it also gives you this perspective on special needs. And let me tell you, why is this important? Because when we think culturally about where things are going in this life discussion, you know, a lot of discussion is around abortion or around how do we be for life? And certainly adoption is one of those ways. But when you think about special needs, one of the challenges we have as we look to the future is our governments and those around us who are looking at our economy, looking at the expenses, looking at insurance, looking at how do we provide for our citizens. One of the things the common good has always been about is caring for all people, whether they were contributing in some way that you viewed as valuable or not. The more we understand this, the more we're going to be able to defend that. We're going to be able to argue for this. We're going to be able to help others who might find out that they have a prenatal diagnosis of a child with Down syndrome tell a better story so that they understand that this isn't going to ruin your life. In fact, this is going to add so much to your life. And don't walk into this with fear. Walk into this knowing that this is somebody who God's given you to steward, to love. And in the process of that, you're going to learn so much more about love, unconditional love, service, gratitude, joy, than probably you would had you just lived your quote-unquote normal life. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.